Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Comic-Con Stars. This is Dr. John, and I am wrapping up a little bit of coverage from the Port City Yule Ball that we held on December the 15th in Wilmington, North Carolina. We've got as our guest tonight, Jeremy Hodgson. Jeremy is with a group called Sword Circle. And I'm going to tell you how we actually met. I'm with Carolina Caricatures, and we were at the Myrtle Beach Renaissance Fair about 2 months ago, right?
Yes.
And probably the coolest exhibit there was Sword Circle. It was Jeremy and his business partner, Alex Foster. They had several tents. They had horses. They had crafts. They had archery. They had sword fighting. I mean, it was just wild. And I immediately said, I need to get these guys to the Yule Ball and also to the Cape Fear Comic Con because they're a lot of fun and people enjoyed them. So, Jeremy, first of all, thanks for being in Myrtle Beach. It was good meeting you and all of your people there.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun there. It was kind of rotten weather the first weekend, but the second weekend it was very, very nice. And that's when you were able to get all your crafts out there and the horses and everything. It was really good. So why don't you, first of all, start off by telling us where Sword Circle is located and who all is involved in it.
Sword Circle is located in Garner, North Carolina. There's myself, Jeremy. I'm the vice president of the company. My business partner, Alex Foster, he's the owner also. And we also have a young lady named Gail Keating involved, and she does equestrian arts. That is the three main people behind the scenes.
Behind Sword Circle, that's great. And now what is your area of expertise and what is Alex's area of expertise?
My area of expertise is actually in the archery department. I grew up doing archery, and so I've taken it to the next level. I am a level 2 archery coach for USA Archery also, so I love to teach archery, and to expound on that a little bit, I also make my own archery equipment. I make my own bows, make my own arrows, stuff like that. Alex Foster, his focus is on the sword fighting. He's studied European longsword, and so his main focus is on the sword fighting part of it.
Okay, that's great. Now, tell you what, we are very fortunate. It looks like we have we might have another guest with us. Is that Papa Stro Maestro?
Yeah, speaking. How are you?
Wonderful. Thanks for joining us, Jeremy. Papa Stro has a busy schedule, but he said he'd stop by for just a couple of minutes. May I just chat with him for a second, and then we'll get back to archery. Is that okay?
Not a problem, John.
Well, Papa Stro, you and I had a nice long couple of days there on the road at the Port City Yule Ball, and we were also down at the barbershop in Loras, South Carolina. Thanks a lot for being with us. We had a pretty good time, didn't we?
Yeah, it sure did. It was a pleasure to be a part of it. The Port City Yule Ball was great. I've seen everybody there. It was quite the motley crew, so to say, but it was great being there and great being Papa Claus, reciting the night before Comic-Con Christmas. That was really, really cool, and seeing everybody there. And the next day, being at the great folks at the barbershop in Lower South Carolina, it was great meeting everybody and trying some of their chicken bog and seeing the locals there and seeing Banana Jackie. It was a great time.
Let me ask you this. Is that the first chicken bog you've ever had?
I have to say yes, and it was delicious. Very good.
You know, it really was. They put out a feast for us, and we certainly do appreciate it. And we're also broadcast on WLSC 1240 AM on Loras on Monday nights, and it was great to be there with Banana Jack and be there with you. And I know you've got a busy schedule and a lot of things going on, but we sure do appreciate you dropping by tonight and just saying hello to everybody. What kind of a Christmas message do you have for us?
Well, a big one I like to send everybody is, you know, life takes its toll on us all, has its ups and downs, and brings us to our knees and beats us up every which direction, pillar for post. And some people, they sink in the sand, where others stand through it all on a solid foundation. And the fact that, you know, the world can use and abuse you, and people can come and go and leave your life, but you know, Jesus was born in this holiday season, and he will always be there for you. He'll love you and be there for you no matter what. So, you know, stick, you know, search, look to him, and thank him for being born on this season for all of us, and to always strive to be your very best, and to love your neighbor, and to be the very best you can be, and help others be the best they can be. That's what it's all about, uplifting and helping each other this Christmas.
That is a wonderful Christmas message. I appreciate you bringing that to us tonight. You know, it's always great to have you around. You are an inspirational and uplifting person when you're around. You're always positive, and it shows that it gets out to the crowd and everything, and they all always enjoy being around you. So I wanted to say thanks a lot for dropping by tonight. I know you got a busy schedule, but it means a lot to everybody to hear your voice and hear your Christmas message, okay?
Yes, and thank you, Dr. John, for everything, all the support this year, and thank you for all the fans listening in, and all the friends and family from around the world for your gracious support. God bless you all, and I hope you have a great Christmas and a wonderful 2017.
Well, thank you, sir. We'll be talking to you again soon. Okay.
Absolutely. Look forward to it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Merry Christmas.
Merry
and
Christmas.
So, everybody, that was Papa Stro Maestro, the one of the great wrestlers of our time, and somebody we have come to know and really enjoy watching him as he does everything. And right now, I know he's got a busy set schedule, but he was with us this past Thursday and Friday, and it was just a real privilege to be with him. It was. And so, Jeremy, you and I were talking about archery. And you said that you build your own archery equipment. Tell us a little bit about that. I find that extremely interesting.
Well, there is somewhat of an art to it. First of all, whenever I make all wood bows, and whenever first part of the process is trying to find a good piece of wood that will hold up under such a strain. Because when you string that bow, well, that's a lot of strain already. You're already taking a piece of straight wood and you're bending it into a D shape. Then you put the arrow on, you start pulling it back, that's even more strain. So to get a good piece of wood that will hold up under that pressure is, well, first of all, it's hard to find that type of wood, and you have to know a little bit of the anatomy of the tree and the different types of wood that are out there available for this process.
What type of wood is best for a bow?
Well, there's many different ones. Some of them are super expensive and hard to get your hands on. One of these is called Osage Orange. And to try to get a straight piece of Osage Orange is very difficult also. Now, in medieval times, they would use yew. And again, now it is a hard wood to get a hold of. If you get your hands on a piece, then you make a very good bow. However, there are some woods that, although they're a little bit inferior, they're cheap and you can almost get them anywhere. One of these woods is hickory. And hickory is a very resilient wood. They use it in making chairs a lot of times because you can steam it and bend it a lot easier than a lot of other woods. So myself, that's what I use. I use hickory. And to compare hickory to other woods, if you take a piece of oak and you just break it in half, it breaks clean. Whereas if you take a piece of hickory and you try to break it in half, it never actually breaks in half. All it does is splinters, but all the fibers are all still interwoven with each other. So it makes it a much better wood for bows.
Okay. And then once you have the wood, what type of finish? I'm sure you have to put some type of finish on that to protect it and make it last, right?
Yes. For me, I use linseed oil. The wood will absorb the linseed oil, and it helps preserve the wood. And it also gives it a nice glossy finish when it's all said and done also. So not only does it preserve the wood, it also makes it look beautiful.
Right. Now, how long are the bows that you make, I guess, from one end of the string to the other?
There are a little bit of varying lengths, but basically they're between the lengths of 66 inches long to 72 inches long. So basically 5'6" to 6 feet long.
Wow, that's a pretty large instrument there. They're not exactly that easy to carry around. It takes a little bit of effort to carry them around, doesn't it?
Yes, it actually does. Now, there are other designs that you can do where it will shorten them. You can take the ends and steam them and bend them, so you're putting a recurve at the end of it. So then you can get your bows down to about 5 feet long in those cases. Much harder process to do, and it's a harder process. It's a lot more time-consuming, and sometimes the wood doesn't hold up to that type of strain.
Okay, now what type of string do you actually use on your bows?
Well, because I do the medieval era, I actually use linen for my bow strings. I get linen thread, and what you have to do is there's a special board that has a design on it. You have to follow the design, and it takes 16 strands of the linen to make one bowstring, and it's one continuous string. So it's 16 strands, or it's one strand folded 16 times, basically, is how you could look at it. And but then at the very end, it's called a Flemish twist that you put on the very end, and it's a special knot that you twist it and you knot the very end of it, where it hooks onto the nocks of the bow when you go to string it. So medieval times, you used linen. That was the number one material. Now they use, it's called Decron. It's a synthetic material. It's kind of has a little bit of a plasticky feel to it, but that's what they use in modern times.
Okay, and how much, these are not cheap to make. What would a bow cost, a good one that you would make, to use in a medieval or Renaissance fair setting?
You can be talking anywhere from $250 and up, depending on the poundage of the bow, how much strength it takes to pull the bow back. A lower poundage, you can get roughly $250, but as you go up in weight, it gets more expensive because that's more strain that you're putting on that wood. So it's a lot harder to make a higher poundage bow.
Okay. Now, you were also talking about being a level 2 archery instructor. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
All right. Now, I'm level 2 archery coach with USA Archery. USA Archery are the people that govern the Olympics. So they're the ones that whenever the people are shooting archery in Olympics, they have gone through archery coaches through USA Archery and have learned from a young age how to shoot from coaches from USA Archery. So they are a huge organization. They have, you know, they have great programs out there for people who are into archery. And there's different types of archery also. You got traditional, that's what I do with the long bows, stuff like that. And then you've got compound. And so depending on which area you want to go into, you would find a coach who specifies on that particular type of bow. I do recurves, so anybody that comes to me, I teach them how to shoot recurves. I can do long, I can shoot compounds, and I know about them and everything, but because I f- focus so much on the recurve, there's a few aspects about compound bows that I can't help some people with, at least a higher level, whenever you get to higher level shooting. Now, like I said, there are, I believe, 5 levels of archery coaches. So you got level 1, basically they run summer camps. So when you go to a summer camp, you got all the little kids shooting for the first time, they use level 1 coaches. Level 2, now I can do private archery lessons as a level 2 archery coach. So somebody comes to me and says, I want to learn archery, and I just want to devote a lot of time to it. As a level 2 archery coach, I can assist and help people with this. Also, level 2 archery coaches can make or can do courses to train level 1 coaches. So they can certify people to become level 1 archery coaches.
Okay. So you're a level 2 coach, and you're, I would assume you're looking at some point to move up in the ranks.
That is correct. And in order to get a level 3 certification, I have to be a level 2 archery coach for 3 years. And I've got 2 years under my belt right now.
Okay. Well, we'll keep tabs on you with that and hope you make that in about a year. Now, getting back to the whole idea of sword circle, can you tell us, you told me a little bit this past Thursday night at the Yule Ball about how it got started. Can you relay that story? Because I think people would enjoy hearing that.
Yes, sir. Now, so Sword Circle started with a little kid. He was about 10 years old, and he loved sword fighting. He loved studying it. He would get books, read about it, and everything. Well, then he would go out into the neighborhood and get all the local boys together, and they would grab sticks, and they would start swinging them at each other for sword fighting. Well, as you can imagine, parents did not like this very well, because then the kids started coming home, getting hurt, and everything like that. So the boy's father came to him and said, you cannot do sword fighting anymore. Too many people are getting hurt. The parents are complaining. You can't do it anymore. Well, this boy was determined, and he's like, I really want to sword fight, and the only way I'm going to get better at it is practicing it with other people. So he went to his father. He said, okay, what if I build a prototype of a safe sword? That way nobody gets hurt. We can still practice, and nobody gets hurt. So he said, his father said, okay. He's like, you build something, bring it to me, I'll approve it. I'll even fight you with it. That way I can, we can prove that it's safe. I'll take it to the other parents in the neighborhood, show them, get their approval, and then you can do it. So he worked on it for about a year. He worked on, he made a prototype, it would break. He'd make another one, it'd be too hard, it'd hurt. And he worked on it. Finally, he came up with an idea, he made it, took his father said, that works. So he'd go out in the neighborhood, and he'd started the sword fighting again. Well, people about the age of 15, people move, get different interests or anything. And he was like, well, I want to do this with more people. So he went to a local park, and they started sword fighting there. And so people walking through the park would see him and be like, what's this? And he would tell them, well, I've been studying sword fighting since I was 10. I've studied all the medieval manuscripts and everything, he said, and so he'd draw more people into his class that way. And when he hit about 20 years old, he had a pretty good following, but he ended up needing to go to college, and so he was going to shut the program down. Well, at the time, I had come along, and I was in his group, and I was learning. I'd learned everything that he knew. So I said, hey, I would love to take this. I would love to keep the group going. He's like, all right, sure, you go ahead and do that. So I ran the classes for about a year. And in that time, Alex had come into the picture, and he had learned. He'd actually learned from the first guy, Daniel. And then when I came along and started teaching, he learned the rest of it from me. And, well, life happened, and I had to move to Fayetteville, so I couldn't do the group anymore. And so Alex was like, well, I want to keep doing it. I was like, all right, cool. You can keep running it. Any advice you need, any help you need, feel free to ask. And within that time period, that's where me and Alice became best friends also. And so he started running it. And one day he came to me and he said, do you think we can do this as a business? I'm like, I'm like, we have to add more things in order to make it a business, not just sword fighting. Now, if we cover all of medieval, I think we got something. Well, then about 2 months later, I get a phone call of another friend of mine. He's like, hey, would you guys want to do a medieval, a Renaissance fair, do sword fighting at a Renaissance fair? I was like, when's the fair? And he said, this weekend. And it was a Monday he was calling me. I was like, how many people? He's like, about 7,000 people. So I made a couple phone calls and, you know, called Alex up immediately. I was like, if we got the equipment to do it, I said, let's try it. And so I called him up. He said, yep, we've got, I forget, I think we had 20 swords at the time, the foam swords that participants can use. And so within a week, we got about 10 people together. We got a tent. We went to the fair, and we did sword fighting for 2 days straight. The fair loved us. They were like, you guys are very professional. You guys are very safety-oriented. They've had other groups come in there and talk a big talk, but then they get in there and people get hurt. And this is a problem. So whenever they were watching us, they were looking at safety. And they're like, you guys, that's your number one priority. We see that. They're like, we want you to come to our other two fairs up in Virginia in July and October or something like that. So that kind of catapulted us into starting our business. When we hit that point, we're like, okay, we could do this. And so that's when we went ahead and got a studio in Garner, North Carolina, where we have an archery range inside. We have a middle room. It's just a big, wide-open room. And if we need to, we can lay mats on the floor, and that's where we do our sword fighting. So that's kind of how things got started. It was crazy, let's put it that way.
Wow, that sounds great. Now, where was that first fair that you went to, if you don't mind me asking that?
No problem. It was Fayetteville, North Carolina. It was a Fort Bragg event.
No, that's right. Yeah, there's an annual event there. It's a Renaissance fair. What isn't that usually in the fall?
Yes, it's normally the third weekend of September, and it's at Smith Lake in Fayetteville, North Carolina. It might be considered Fort Bragg on Smith Lake.
Right. Well, that's very interesting. And so you still go back there every year, don't you?
Every year. And that first year we started with just doing the sword fighting. Now we do sword fighting, we do the archery, we do axe throwing, we do candle making, and there's a couple of other activities we also do there.
Now the candle making was really, that was exciting because I saw kids really getting involved and enjoying that. Tell everybody a little bit about the candle making, what you use and how you set it up.
So with the candle making, we use 100% beeswax. We have a local farmer who has a bunch of bees. He's a retired farmer. So he's like, hey, you guys need beeswax? You know, I got it. You can buy it off of me. And so all we do, well, I shouldn't say all we do, there is something to the process. So we take the beeswax. It comes in a big cake. And the cake itself is 20 pounds. So one chunk of beeswax is 20 pounds. And we take that, break it up, and put it into buckets. And then we have to have a fire where we put the buckets on the fire and melt that beeswax. Now, there's many reasons why we use beeswax. Three main ones. First reason, it smells good, kind of smells like honey. Second reason is it doesn't smoke when you burn it. And the third reason is it burns slow, so it lasts longer. Now, there is a fourth reason, and it's a safety reason. And that is it melts at a low temperature. Paraffin wax, you're talking about 180-degree wax. So if you touch it, it's going to burn you. Beeswax,
exactly.
It melts at about 120 degrees. So if you touch it, it smarts. It, you know, it has a little bit of pain, but it doesn't actually burn you. So anyways, we put it on the fire, and it melts. Then we also had to go get buckets of water. First of all, we had to have a bucket of water there for the fire, just in case anything happens with that. But the second reason is when they're making their candles, it is very important that that they keep the beeswax cool. So what they do is they'll get their wick, and they'll go to the beeswax, and they'll dip in the beeswax. And when they do that, they have to do it pretty quick. If you dip it in the beeswax and you hold it in the beeswax, it remelts all the wax on that string, and then your candle does not grow as you go through the process. So you dip it in the wax, then you go to the next can, which will be water. You dip it in there and hold it in for a couple seconds. Then you go to the next can, wax, and then water. And you repeat this process. Now, at first, when you're doing this, you dip it and you pull it out, and it just looks like a crooked little string. Well, after you dip it in water, you can straighten it out. As the process goes on, you can form the candle with your fingers, because after you dip it in water, it's cooled off. And you can make your candle very smooth as you make it. But it is still very important you hold in that water, because the candle will not grow. Now, the last thing about it is the candle at first when you're dipping, you know, it just looks real small, and it's like, this is taking forever. It's not going to grow. But candles grow exponentially. So the bigger they get, the faster they grow. So you start off with this tiny little thing. You go through the process. You're like, wow, this is taking a little while. But before you know it, you got a candle as fat as your thumb. And then if you keep going, just a couple of more minutes, you've got a lot even bigger than that, like twice that size. So they grow very quickly as they get bigger.
Right, and I saw you make a candle. In fact, I still have this candle right here on my mantle that you made in front of me, and that's exactly right. It took a little while for it to get started, but then after a little while, it just grew and grew and grew quickly, and you were done.
Yes, it is an amazing thing to watch.
Right. Now, you and Alex and your other associate, you do Renaissance fairs and other things. What fairs do you have coming up where people could come and see you?
Well, the first one that I can think of would be in Wilmington. Well, at your event, actually, the Comic-Con event in Wilmington. We will be there.
At your Comic-Con. Yeah, that's going to be May,
yes,
March 11th.
Comic-Con.
At Coastline Center. Yep.
Then in April, the last weekend in April, we're going to be in a place in Apex called Optimus Farm. They're doing a Renaissance fair there. And same thing, we've been doing this fair for about 3 years now. We run the archery part of it. It's a pretty good size fair. So that's at Optimus Farm in Apex, North Carolina. So that's in last weekend in April. And then we have, then next one after that would be actually in Virginia. It's a place called Stone Tower. It's way out in the middle of nowhere, but the scenery there is absolutely stunning. You walk in, it's in the mountains. And then you pull in, and there's these, they just look like chimneys, about 400-foot high chimneys, but they're natural rock formations that have been there for thousands of years. So it's a perfect set, perfect atmosphere for a Renaissance fair. So that one is in June, the last weekend in June. And then the next one after that is actually in September. That's the Fort Bragg at Smith Lake in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Well, sounds good. Sounds like people can come and find you and enjoy the crafts that you do and enjoy the archery and the sword fighting. And Alex is the expert in sword fighting in the group, right?
That is correct.
Right. And then you also, from time to time, have horses and equestrian arts, right?
That is correct. Gail Keating, she's in charge of that, and she has a stable. She's called the Blue Moon Equestrian, and she has about 7 horses right now.
Well, I remember at the Myrtle Beach Renaissance Fair, it was a lot of fun. I spent a lot of time at your booth, and I'm glad that we were able to work it out where you could come to the Cape Fear Comic-Con on March the 11th. people can enjoy your watching you do archery. They can watch you do sword fighting. We'll see what all we can do. I know we have a paved parking lot, but I bet you that you and Alex and I, we can figure something out and have some medieval and Renaissance arts there at the Cape Fear Comic Con, won't we?
That is correct. We were actually talking about it right before, oh no, earlier this afternoon. I sat down and talked to him, and we were discussing some options with that.
Well, that's great. Well, we certainly look forward to having you there, and I want to say I really appreciate you being on Comic-Con Stars tonight, especially as we wrap up the Port City Yule Ball. We had Papa Stro Maestro on a little bit earlier with an inspirational Christmas message. I always like to hear his inspirational messages. And Jeremy Hodson from and you are from Fayetteville right now, correct?
That is correct. Yes.
Yeah, Jeremy Hodson from Fayetteville, part of Sword Circle, which is located in Garner, and they do wonderful medieval and Renaissance crafts, enactments, sword fighting, archery, equestrian arts, and crafts. So quite the package. And so, Jeremy, thank you very much. And I'll tell you what, I'd like to have you and your business partner, Alex, on another time as we roll into 2017. Let's get that arranged for another time, okay?
Yes, that sounds like a great plan.
All right, good. Well, thank you very much. And everybody, now how can they find you on the internet? Is it just Facebook or do you have a website?
No, we have our own website. Our website is swordcircle.com. And so we have events listed on there. We have programs, our classes, everything on our website. We are also on Facebook. Sword Circle LLC. You can find us either of those two places.
All right. Well, I think I found you on both of them, and we'll keep tabs with you and keep watching you grow and do more and more Renaissance and medieval arts, crafts, and skills. So, look, Jeremy, thank you very much. Tell Alex we missed him. Look forward to having him again. And everybody else, I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful Christmas week. We'll be back with you on Thursday night with Reverend Hector Murray talking about his series of books, Faith and Fandom. So for Comic-Con Stars on the VOC Nation, this is Dr. John saying good evening, have a wonderful holiday week, and we'll speak to you soon. Thanks a lot.